You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with writer-director Larry Clark. Larry's new film is called 3 Days with Dad and recounts a family's journey over the funeral process of their deceased father. In this one-on-one, we get to speak to Larry about the autobiographical nature of his piece, the dynamics of transition between a father and son, and finding humor in the dark moments. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. I really do appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy.
Absolutely. Thanks for your interest in the film.
Yeah. I mean, can you talk to me a little bit about 3 Days with Dad? It's a lot of fun and also not in parts, but it's, can you tell me where you got the idea for the film?
Yeah, my dad passed away, and a lot of this is based on that. I mean, a lot of it's factual. Most of those events happened.
Wow.
And then I manipulated a little bit by, bringing in the love story and the found son. But, you know, my dad passed away 10 years ago, and it was, and my mother passed away. I used a couple things from her as well. But, you know, it's an absurd experience, and it was filled with irony and sometimes just outright humor. And then, of course, there was this darkness, but at the same time, not what I expected. So I wanted to create a project that that I'd never really seen before. And I wanted to see if I could create a movie where people would have an experience that I kind of felt. I don't know. I mean, I attempted to do it so that people kind of fall in love with this family and this flawed family. You know, they're just highly flawed, including Eddie. And then really, and then kind of slows down at the end and you kind of have an experience of what he went through and how and why he was transformed. Because I was transformed with my dad, and I wasn't even that close to him, really. You know, kind of like Eddie. I was very surprised by the impact of his death.
Yeah, it's interesting about how this film sort of plays out. I mean, and Brian Dennehy is ever-present in the film, but he's also probably in it, seems like, the least. But obviously, our fathers impact us in ways we don't expect, but you see that woven throughout all their characters, even when they're not around him.
Right. Yeah, he has, it's his presence in the film. It's really, and just like in the hospital, when they're not there, they're there. And when they're lying there, they have this incredible presence.
Yeah.
And you kind of just want them to wake up and have the whole thing be over with. But of course, that's not happening. And also, no matter how present they are, whether they're in a coma or whether they're talking or whatnot, it's very different than the death experience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just fascinated by it, and it's my particular story, and I wanted to be as honest as I could be about it, and I thought that would make an interesting movie. And I like challenges, and this is my first movie, and I'm not challenged that often as a character actor, so I figured I'd try to make a movie and practice, you know, what I preach. You know, I've always said I wanted to do this, and then I finally did it, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things I thought was wonderful about the characters is this real humanity. And I can see that, you know, you talk about it stems from your journey. How did you go about constructing these characters? Was it collaborative with the actors? Did you have a specific vision in mind?
I honestly, based on real-life characters.
Right.
So their voices are very similar to the ones in my family.
Okay.
And things that they say. You know?
Yeah.
You know, like, for example, the scene about whether it's going to be abortion, I mean, right to life and stuff, right, is going to be included in the liturgy. I had that argument with them. Hmm. You know, and it was ugly. It was a lot uglier in real life than it was on the screen. I kind of made it a little less so.
Yeah.
But I got really angry. I mean, it got ugly. And so I put that in. I just thought, that's just such a weird thing. I can't believe they even pulled it off. They tried to do that to me and us. Because our family is, like, conservative, and it's liberal. It's split down the side. And then also the same problem with the priest not allowing us to bring the coffin down. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. To do the, you know, a Catholic church, they can only bring it down during the Mass because it's a celebration of life. So they don't want people weeping over coffins for eulogies. Eulogies don't really exist in a traditional funeral of a Catholic Mass. Catholic Mass funeral. They don't allow them.
Okay.
The priest delivers the homily over the coffin.
Okay.
And they don't allow eulogies. So that really pissed me off. That happened twice, to my mom and my dad.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God. I said, how many movies have I seen where, you know, in the middle of the Mass, someone gets up and, you know, gives a eulogy over their parents. Come on. Like, what's your problem?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let it happen. But that was a sore point. It was a real sticking point.
Yeah.
I used to make a bigger deal about that in the movie, but I let that go too. I kind of like changed the scenes and just made it kind of funny in a way when Daddy just brings the coffin down.
Yeah, that was a great scene. Was it difficult to use your own stories? I mean, you're using your stories from your own family.
Yeah.
Would it be hard for that? Was it cathartic? Were there challenges?
Well, you know, I've discovered that in writing, and I'm relatively new to writing. I've been writing for like the last 10 years. But the stuff that's closest to home and how you feel is the most inspiring to write. And there's nothing as unique as your own voice. So the truer you are to that voice, and that voice is me in that situation. And then, you know, I start there, and then I can usually... then I can move away from it. You know, and that's when the movie kind of takes a couple of liberties here and there. But it did start with the story, and I put it in front of people. Like, I wrote about 10 pages at a time and started reading it out loud at this reading group that I developed it at. And what I really wanted to express to them was, I said, this end-of-life experience is very funny, and it's also very tragic. And I said, it has to have the feeling of both. In order for this film to succeed. Because if it's just a downer, I mean, really, why watch it, you know? So I needed a story of redemption in there. You know, that was the added part. Because I don't drink anymore. And, you know, I see old friends when I go back home, but I didn't sleep with, you know, a stripper and all that stuff. But an ex-stripper. But, you know, you are confronted with your past when you go back home and your father dies in a hospital where you spent your childhood at. And it's a unique experience. And so anyway, I usually started with the actual experience and then I would manipulate it. So, for example, I said, how can I get a really unique character here? And I based it on my buddy that broke his neck. And he was a paraplegic, not a quadriplegic, but I made him a quad I've never seen a quadriplegic character act like that, so I made him a born again. And my buddy, who was a paraplegic, is born again. And he was not that religious, and now he's born again. And he's in a wheelchair and blah, blah, blah. So I kind of took his voice and put it in, and I kind of switched. You know, in my head, I made him this other guy from high school, this guy that has never stopped partying since we graduated 25 years ago. He stayed exactly the same, and he approaches life the same way, he dresses the same way, and so I made Brick that guy, except, you know, he just broke his neck and became born again, but he's still this dude that listens to the same music and rocks out and has a good time. And he's not that deep of a dude, but turns out he's pretty wise at the end.
Yeah, I love the way his character sort of arrives by the end of the film. It's really kind of, arrives is the wrong word, but sort of.
Yeah, and I was just like, you know, when I was writing that quad scenes, I was like giggling to myself. I even had more scenes, and I had to ultimately have to cut them. But I just loved writing that character of a guy who's not afraid, and actually happier than most people that can move their arms and legs. I thought that was a really interesting idea. And again, I like to, you know, challenge myself in writing. I also want to create characters that are fun to perform, and I'm an actor, so I know what that feels like. I know what it looks like on the page. And that was the standard. And I just always go back to that standard when I'm writing, right before we shoot, and while we're shooting, I'll make changes all the way up till, you know, literally while the camera's rolling, we're changing lines and coming up with ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, you had a great cast for that. I mean, there's no question that you'd have a lot of people that could be working with as you're adapting and growing the story.
Yeah, these guys are incredible to work with. I mean, they're phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, you referred to the film as a memory film in the sense of, like, time sort of happens in snapshots and it's all over the place. Why did you want to tell your story that way?
Well, the idea of a linear story didn't intrigue me. I didn't want people to think at the end, like, is he going to die or not? You know, and then the funeral's at the end. I mean, to me, life and these experiences are chaotic.
Hmm.
And when you spend time in a hospital, when you spend time with a loved one who's dying, you are constantly thrown into the past.
Hmm.
And you know, I kept looking at my dad, and I kept seeing this strong guy from the past, and then there was this weak man in front of me.
Hmm.
And I just came with this idea of Eddie being in a funeral and just remembering, you know, what he's been through. And it's just kind of he can't kind of control his mind. And he experiences it in a heartbeat. You know, he just kind of goes through it all in his head.
Hmm.
And he's a completely different guy. You know, it's been 3 weeks and he's not the man he was before. And I knew I had to have a character arc of redemption and in there, and I wanted to use a very non-typical structure, like that Jim Carrey movie and Kate Winslet movie, The Spotless Mind,
Eternal Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine. I remember being really blown away by how they used memory and they jumped around in that movie and how we were lost and yet still found our way. I love that script. And I also don't mind, and again, this has been a constant challenge in the edit and in the post process, is seeing how far I can challenge an audience to stay. I mean, how much do you have to lead them? And in the same sense, how much do you have to challenge them? And I like to challenge people usually when I'm performing, and not tell them what my scene's about. I'm not really necessarily even telling them so I didn't want to say what my movie was about or even what my scene's about. So I kind of challenged them by showing a coffin at the beginning and saying, okay, well, here's the end.
Hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to stick around for this? You know, and some people won't, some people will, but I'm like, this isn't a movie about whether he will die or not. It's not about that. It's about a man a man boy who becomes a man in a way. He gets a second shot because his dad dies.
Yeah, can we talk about that? Because it's really interesting with Eddie's journey, because he goes from son and the father to the reverse. And it's such an interesting character dynamic and a switch. I was wondering why that's such a difficult process to sort of hold that up, what makes that such a great shift?
Well, it happened in my life.
Hmm.
You know, I had a child 7 years ago, and I got married 4 years before that. And I remember I didn't really want to get married in life, and I didn't want to have a child. I was like, you know, I'm an actor, I'm nomadic and freelance, so I didn't have time to be tied down, you know, and that's the way I looked at it. And then my life started to change. You know, people started getting sick and dying, and I lost friends, and I lost my parents. And then I started to really look at life differently. I started to think that I knew that I was never going to, if I stayed in that as this, like, irresponsible man boy who had no, you know, a committed relationship over a long period of time and no children, I knew I would never really grow as a person. I just knew it. And so I got married. I remember telling my wife, I'm like, no, I'm not doing the whole live-in thing anymore. I said, I'm going to commit to it, even as imperfectly as that is. We try to commit to this and change, you know. So, you know, did that, and I'll never regret that, even though it was difficult because I really am a man boy. And even having the child, I was like, do we want to do this? You know, and she was like, I don't know. And you look around and everyone starts having kids and they're all changing. And you start to think, am I going to be this kind of person? And kind of what, you know, what he says in the movie, do you just stare at yourself in the mirror and just see yourself and that's what your life's going to be about? Hmm. You know, that's not an interesting life. I think that when you can learn to be of service and, I think pass on your life, your legacy to something else. There's a key on the other end, especially as our bodies get older and whatnot, that it's about passing it on. And that's not a view I always had. So, again, that's the thing that you learn as you approach middle age. So I wanted to reflect that journey of, you know, where I went from kind of this selfish person into this guy who, you know, had a kid. And I enjoyed making Eddie see a son who was his genetic mirror.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to cast a kid that looked almost exactly like, well, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes. But just like, you know, I had this idea of this, you know, I did it the way I wrote it, to tell you the truth. I had a whole other version. I ran out of time, so I really couldn't tell the story the way I wanted to. But I had him in the gutter. I had Eddie in the gutter hiding between two cars, and he was watching the kids play. And I had this whole angle where he was looking at his kid in slow motion. And anyway, it became what it became. It just like he just kind of jumped between the cars. But this idea of kind of magically seeing this kid and him knowing intuitively and immediately that this is his. Mm. And that has an immediate impact on him. Like, changes him immediately. And I just am very intrigued by that idea. And, what I attempted to do.
Yeah, it works well. You know, one of the things I was thinking, too, it's a fascinating film, and hearing what you were talking about before is sort of wrestling with the church on things like the where the casket can be and that sort of thing. But there's some interesting conversations, or even like in the eulogy. But there's some interesting conversations, like for example, Tom Arnold says, "There's no grace for you because you never earned it." And yeah. I actually laughed when I saw that, when I heard that part, because it was just such a... I thought that was a really interesting line.
Well, I've had conversations like that with my brothers. Yeah, I remember, like, my brother, like, going, who do you pray to if you don't have, you know, Jesus? And I'm like, well, why would you ask me that question? And I've had these, like, arguments with him. It's like, well, if you're not praying to Jesus, it's empty. You're just talking to yourself. And, I mean, I've had these conversations with them. They really believe it. They really believe it. So I'm like, you know what, guys? I have a whole different view of my humanity and my spiritualism or whatever. So I can pray to something regardless of what you think.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be Catholic or Jesus, you know, related. I'm going straight to the source, I always say to them. I'm like, you know, I don't need Jesus to get there. I'll go right to the source. I'm like, how about I talk right to the Father, okay? And they're all like, they're just so disgusted at me, worried about my soul. And I'm like, I can understand that. I even say things like, I'd rather be in hell. I mean, if there is a hell, let's go to hell. I don't want to go to heaven. Hmm. I'd rather be with all the sinners. You know, I'd rather...
yeah.
What is it? I'd rather party with the sinners than cry with the saints. I don't know what the hell. Yeah. That's from that Billy Joel song. But I do believe... that just pisses them off so much when I say stuff like that. So, you know, we're diametrically opposed, but, you know, I am spiritual, so...
Yeah. Well, that's why I love that it comes out in the film, is there sort of, and sort of even Eddie is sort of working that stuff through, and it's sort of like he's here, his brothers are here, the church is here, they're all sort of working it out together, and Eddie's just like, look, you know, I have my faith, and they're like, no, but it's not the right one, because it's not doing it this way. It's really, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yes, it is. It went more in depth, but I had to cut it. I had more of that stuff in the movie, but I ran out of time. That's another thing I learned, that you don't have that much time in a comedy. No one wants to watch a 2-hour version of that.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So I had to cut stuff down. So, but it makes the point. And, you know, you got the point. So that's important. I'm fascinated by that, and the filmmaking process is how many times you have to say something, you know?
Right.
And if you say it too much, it's I don't think it's good storytelling.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to get rid of redundancy and how much is enough to create character, or, you know, sometimes the best points are throwaways. You know what I mean? Like an audience, yeah, like they'll say it once, not an audience, a character will say it once and the audience will pick it up.
Yeah.
So, like, I was talking to another interviewer the other day, and she was like, well, you know, you missed the plane and all this stuff. And I told her, I said, I was fascinated by that because I had written a scene in the airport.
Hmm.
And we were going to shoot it, and we ran out of time. And then I got into the editing room, and they were like, you don't need it. You don't need the scene in the airport. You just say that you missed the plane.
Yeah.
And we get it, you know. So I find that stuff fascinating. And, you know, if I had more money, I would have had that airport scene. Then I probably would have cut it, too.
Hmm.
So, you know, because you get to editing, you kind of have to go, what needs to be in here and what doesn't need to be. So, you know, that's filmmaking as far as I'm concerned. That's why it's a craft, and you can study it for, you know, your whole life, and what needs to be in, what doesn't need to be in, and yeah, why it exists in front of an audience, and, it, you know, it doesn't exist in a vacuum.
Absolutely.
So how they respond to it is very important. So I'm very intrigued, and that's why I like doing these interviews too.
As we start to wrap up here, I mean, I know we've sort of talked about it here, but can we talk about the style of humor in the film? Because, you know, we're here in this middle of these heavy moments, but there's some really genuine humor, like the flat nose, you know, and, you know, there,
Jesus,
these
yeah,
things. And I think you sort of said that a lot of these things actually happen in real life, but how do you find that balance between drama and humor?
Yeah, I didn't know until I started writing it.
Hmm.
It was horrifying. That was my mother, and she was like in this cardboard box, and my brother identified her, and he was like, I shouldn't have done that. He like turned around and was like, oh God. And he's like, I know it was a sweat. And we told the funeral home later, and they took some money off or something. But it's this ridiculous thing where you know your parent is there, they've been in the freezer there for a couple of days, and something shifted, you know. And it's just a thing about life, you know. That's what happens at the end of life, and there's some basic things you're gonna see that are just horrifying, and how you deal with it is how you deal with it.
Mm.
So, you know, my sister actually wasn't there, you know, during that night, but there was a crematorium that was a pet crematorium that it broke down for my mom. We couldn't take her to a normal crematorium.
Mm.
We had to go to one that had dual purpose. And it was a horrible experience. It was horrible. It was disgusting. And there were pictures of animals all over the walls. And, you know, it was the kind of place that you shouldn't go to. But and they were very surprised we did. But we were like, no, I mean, why can't everybody stay with the body until it's cremated? Because it seemed normal to us. So I've done that twice, or three times now, where you stay with the body.
Mm.
But, you know, that just became our family ritual. Some people just leave the body, and they just let people, you know, come back with the ashes. But our family's like, no, we're gonna go to the oven and, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're our parents. It's like, yeah, I'm going to be with them. Take them to the oven. I don't want them to be alone, even though I know they're dead.
Yeah.
It's these things that come up to you. They don't make any sense, really.
Yeah.
Think about it. Nothing really. It's all illogical.
Well,
it's just what you want to do. And so, for example, and I didn't put this in the movie. I'm not going to say that. There's some, in other words, I was going about to tell you a little bit of a family secret, but I'm not going to say it because I forgot. I'm talking to an interviewer. But, you know, some stuff goes down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, for example, when my cousin was buried, and they put in his dog ash. His dog died, and they, like, put in the ashes in with the dog, and that was, like, a big deal because it desecrated Patrick. And, but they didn't tell the they didn't tell the church that because you're not allowed to bury animals with people. And
right.
It's all that stuff comes up after you die. You know, all these weird little rituals and things and, you know, they charge as much as they do for a big plot as they do for ashes, you know, in a little box. Same cost. Yeah. Whether you know, cremate them or not, it's still incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
And I just find that all endlessly, like, ironic and fascinating. And I could have made a series out of this movie, to tell you the truth. I could have, like, made a miniseries. But that would not have been the point. But I think that the gallows humor is it's ever-present in me. I have a dark sense of humor. My family does. And we just have found a lot. There's a lot of things that are funny to happen at the end of life. I mean, that's it. It's just funny.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's hilarious to me that was a real story. I just thought that it was like, hey, this would be hilarious if, but that really happened.
No, that really happened. And my stepmother left right before we pulled the plug.
Wow.
She went to walk the dogs.
Wow.
And I went with her, and we filled up the gas, and it was absolutely ridiculous.
Wow.
But she was in a blackout. She was in an emotional blackout. She doesn't remember that experience.
Yeah.
And we took her back, and then we pulled the plug on my dad.
Wow.
Yeah, it all happened. And that when that was happening, I'd say, this feels like a movie.
Yeah.
This is so absurd that my father's dying in the hospital and I'm filling up the gas tank with my brother-in-law and my stepmother. It's just insane. Because wow. He could have died in any second. So anyway, I was like, I got to put that into a movie. And I did.
And you did.
And a lot of people think, oh, there's no way that happened. No, that exactly happened like that.
Larry, I really appreciate you speaking to me, and I really appreciate your candor. This has been a wonderful time to talk, and I just really appreciate you being so forthright and honest, not just now, but in your movie. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and, you know, this is what independent cinema needs, people that are interested in it and writing about it and talking about it, so thank you for supporting it.
Thanks.
Okay. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks, Larry. Have a great day.
All right, okay. Bud. See ya.
Bye-bye.